Blog Talk Radio.
Look, if you had one shot, one opportunity to seize everything you ever wanted, one moment that you capture, just let it slip.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Right Way. Sorry about the technical difficulties there. We didn't get our usual intro song, but once again, welcome, everyone. Unfortunately, we got some bad news. Malik is sick today, so myself, Austin Mann, will be doing the show by myself today, but it's okay. We got a great show planned. We got a lot of different people that we're going to be talking to tonight. And to start off, we're going to be talking about a little quarterback from the 2014 NFL draft that has been in the headlines lately, and his name is Johnny Manziel. So a good friend of ours actually hooked us up with the person that we're going to have on the show next. His name is Nicky Salatino. Nicky is a cornerback and special teams man. And he plays for the Franklin and Marshall University football team. He is also an aspiring journalist. So I want to welcome now onto the show, Nicky Salatino.
Hey, Austin. Thanks a lot for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Nicky. Glad for you to be here. So, Nicky, just to summarize a little bit to the people listening at home, just tell me a little bit about your article and what was your intent behind the piece that you wrote for The Odyssey?
Yeah, so I guess the article kind of started out. I've been a Johnny Manziel fan probably since the beginning, like 2012 season, ever since he started at Texas A&M. And I guess his like most recent, incident with his girlfriend and the domestic violence incident in Dallas, that kind of got me thinking, like, you know, I that was kind of the defining incident for me that kind of made me reconsider my support for Johnny. And I guess it was kind of a way for me to just kind of voice and just kind of talk about, discuss an important issue in the NFL and just look at society as a whole. And it was kind of personal for me, too, just with Johnny Manziel, a player that I thought that I really enjoyed watching. I thought he's a great player, but for me personally, this is tough for me to have his back. So yeah, that's kind of where it all started.
Yeah, you make a really good point there, because and one of the issues, I agree with you, it's not just because he has had a history of issues off the field, issues specifically, but this latest incident that occurred in Dallas with his girlfriend, the testimonies of what this girl said happened, insanity. I mean, him violent assault charges that he's being charged with, and I don't know about you, but it takes a whole different context now, because before it was stuff where the fans were saying he's got to get help, you know, with rehab and stuff like that, because he was harming himself, but now harming others, it kind of shines him in a different light.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Yeah, I mean, at A&M, and then even earlier on in Cleveland, you know, it was the usual, you know, going out, partying, drinking, things like that. And like, yeah, I guess part of that, I think, too, was the media kind of dramatizing that, because it's Johnny Manziel, and that's easy to do. But then, exactly, when you're going to harm other people with your irresponsible behavior, that's for me when you need to seek help, and you also need to be punished. You need to take responsibility for your actions. So yeah, that was probably the most disheartening part for me as a fan of not only Johnny Manziel but also the NFL.
Exactly, especially with domestic violence cases ravishing the NFL, specifically in the last 2 years, where you've seen a real increase not only in the arrests of NFL players because of domestic violence, but then the NFL trying to you've seen a lot of commercials lately with NFL players trying to promote safety and support victims of domestic violence. So Manziel, in a lot of ways, is just it's just another case that that does not shine well on the NFL, and likewise, it's probably why he's out of a job right now, and it doesn't look like Cleveland has any interest in pursuing him in the future.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't think any team will touch him in the near future. I think this whole legal issue now, I mean, it also becomes like a PR issue for any team that signs Johnny Manziel. It turns into a whole another issue with that. I think first and foremost, I think he needs to, you know, figure out his personal life. Not only his own well-being, but it's obviously his ex-girlfriend's well-being. And I think he needs to pay the consequences of his actions. And I think football should be kind of put on the back burner, and he'll play that by ear. But, yeah, I mean, I just don't see – him making a comeback anytime soon.
So let's start a little bit from the beginning. Back in 2012, 2013, he's the quarterback at Texas A&M. He doesn't necessarily mm-hmm. have the best record even at Texas A&M. Now, I personally was a fan of him. He was a dazzling quarterback. He was a small guy, but he could still do a lot of incredible things. And, of course, he wins the Heisman as a freshman. But even his freshman year, just 3 months or 4 months before he upsets Alabama in Tuscaloosa, he's already arrested once, and he already has a guilty plea on his resume. Yet just 6 months later, he's at the award show in December winning the Heisman. Do you think that this whole hype around him being the freshman Heisman kind of distracted not just the media, but distracted maybe fans and future NFL scouts from seeing the real Manziel, which was behind that Heisman trophy?
I think so, for sure. I think, I mean, Division I single-A college football is a business, I think. I mean, the amount of money and the revenue they make is absolutely absurd. So, yeah, I mean, Johnny Manziel made college football. He made Texas A&M so much money. That's an arrest like that. That's easy to push under the table, and you know, kind of ignore that and let him play and do his thing. And obviously, he's a great player. He's going to make plays. He's going to win the Heisman. And that does nothing but I mean, that's just kind of part of the system of college football nowadays. And it's almost not really college sports. It's almost kind of becoming professional sports.
That's a very good point. Now, when you look at that following season, May of 2014, that's when he enters the NFL draft as a sophomore. Now, before we get into his controversial first round selection with the 22nd overall pick, did you think he made the right move by coming out as a sophomore, or did you think maturity wise, not just as a person off the field but on the field, did you feel like he was ready to become an NFL quarterback, or that he maybe should have waited at least another year till after his junior campaign?
Right. Yeah, I would say from a maturity standpoint, definitely not. I mean, I think he could have stayed 5 years and probably not been mature enough. I'd say from a football standpoint, I mean, I guess he definitely could have worked on like some of the small things, like throwing mechanics and like throwing from the pocket and not scrambling as much. But I mean, I think he did probably what's best for him, because A&M wasn't going to – they're playing in the SEC. They're not one of the best teams in the SEC. When you have a great year like that, two great years, I would say the first year was a lot better, but I think he did the right move for him. But probably wasn't the right move in the long run, but I don't think any move would have been right for Johnny Manziel, because as we see, he keeps making – not only does he make mistakes over and over again, but he makes more worse mistakes over and over again, which is probably the most frightening part about it.
Yeah, it's almost like an anti-progressive with him. He's not only, you said it very well, not only is he continually making mistakes, but they're getting worse. They started off with minor violations on campus, and now you're looking at it and it becomes major assault issues. But getting back to the draft now, the Browns, they traded, not only did they trade up, but this was their second pick just in the first round. And there were rumors that Manziel would have gone even higher and gone up into a top 10 pick. The Browns had, I believe, the 7 or 8 pick in that draft. But do you feel that Johnny Manziel was worth the 22nd overall pick? Because in hindsight, you could look back at it now. He was selected before 4 quarterbacks that are in the NFL right now, including Teddy Bridgewater, Derek Carr, and A.J. McCarron. 2 of those actually made the playoffs this year. So do you think it was the right move to pick him that early?
I think pros and cons, his off-field altercations and things like that, I guess in college a lot of guys get away with that and keep playing, but I think in the NFL has to protect his reputation, and you can't really get away with that stuff in the NFL, and and I think that outweighed his playing ability on the football field. So I think the Browns definitely made a mistake there. But I also think the Browns made a mistake in that when you're drafting a player like Johnny Manziel, you have to you kind of have to coddle him a little bit. You also have to keep in mind he's a young guy. He was drafted, when he was 21, I think? So he's 21. I mean, and he's got that checkered past. So I think the Browns, I mean, you almost have to kind of put him under an older quarterback, maybe. I mean, I just don't think they handled it very well. Maybe gave him almost too much freedom in a way.
Yeah, that's a good point. I did think throughout it, and that was kind of the coaching philosophy, was that Manziel was going to kind of, he was going to have to mature on his own. And you also bring up a good point, because if you look at the other guys, those quarterbacks that I mentioned, Derek Carr, Garoppolo, and A.J. McCarron, they also had quarterbacks that they were under for a time. They were able to mature and watch other quarterbacks and kind of had that, maybe not the same effect as, say, like a Brett Favre and an Aaron Rodgers, but in a way, Manziel never really had that. So do you think from a playing standpoint, Manziel also wasn't really given a fair shot with the Browns, just in terms of not having a veteran presence to help him out?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think that, and also, I mean, not having Josh Gordon, that hurts. They didn't really have a featured back. I think the Browns they're a talented team, but I think when you have it was Mike Pettine and Johnny Manziel, Pettine is a real authoritarian kind of coach, and that's going to clash with Johnny Manziel. I think you gotta have to handle Johnny Manziel in a different way. So I think that whole situation, there were multiple factors that contributed to his failure.
So finally, what I want to ask you is, where does Manziel end up? It seems to be the golden question. Do you think he'll end up anywhere? Do you think he'll get an offer, especially with his looming assault case? And a follow-up to that would be, do you think he'll ever be a starting quarterback again?
Mm-hmm. So for the first question, in the near future, I don't think a team will touch him. But then again, I mean, crazier things have happened. Obviously, with the Greg Hardy case, what he did was probably equally as bad as what Johnny Manziel did, and he somehow was still playing, games. And this happened. Yeah, I mean, he was playing, didn't really get punished. So I wouldn't be I also wouldn't be surprised if a team signed him. But I think if they do sign him, it'll be after all the trial and the court cases, and as we know, that's a long process, so I don't see a team touching him in the near future. And second, what was your second question again?
I was just asking if he does end up on a team, which I agree with you, I think it would be after that court case. Do you think he'll ever be given the opportunity to be a starting quarterback again?
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I mean, personally, I think he could be a good starting quarterback in the NFL. I think there are teams that could probably definitely use his services. But I think that all rests on his off the field behavior. He really has to do a whole 180. And I think he has to fix that before even thinking about, getting back on the football field and being an NFL quarterback. Because being an NFL quarterback, I mean, that's a 24/7, 365 job. You just have to be totally just focused on that. And as you can see, I mean, Johnny Manziel, I know there were videos released. I think last week he's out in, Miami or somewhere partying. And, if you think Tom Brady or Peyton Manning is doing that, no. Those guys are constantly preparing.
Exactly.
In the offseason, working out, getting better. So I think Johnny Manziel just kind of needs to reevaluate his whole approach to the game as a whole. Because it's not college anymore, it's the NFL. It's the big leagues.
Exactly, and you brought up a good point. It's not just him getting signed, but him. How does he, Johnny Manziel, even prove that he's reached a level of maturity? Because every single weekend, or even during the week now, you see stories about Johnny Manziel. You type him in the news, and it's some TMZ report or something like that of him. Some Hollywood gossip with him at a club or something like that. It's never about Johnny Manziel getting better. Johnny Manziel working on his court case. So, to a degree, what incentive would any NFL team want to try to groom this quarterback when he can't even prove his own maturity?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's high risk and it's low reward because, I mean, he just hasn't shown that much upside. I mean, he's the games he did play for Cleveland, he did well with what he had, but no one is worth you know, the off the field, just the complete mess that he is off the field. It's just not worth it, and it's a shame. And I think he, cause like I said before, I think he can be a successful quarterback. I really do.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that one. I do think he has potential. One final question. Not even we're going to switch gears just a little bit here. And this wasn't really planned, but, you know, news broke out today. Peyton Manning will be officially be retiring probably in a press conference tomorrow. You know, you're a college football athlete. Just talk a little bit about and, you know, we're both around the same age range, too. Just talk a little bit about, you know, growing up. Both of us grew up with Peyton Manning, essentially, since he was playing since 98. Just talk about a little bit about, you know, what your takeaway is from his legacy in the NFL, and if he ever had like a personal impact on you and the way you played the game.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Peyton Manning is just kind of defined class, hard work, and he's just a very humble guy. I mean, I think he's just the epitome of what you want to be as like a professional athlete. You know, he's always watching film, always working to get better, always like critiquing himself. And I think to have the ability to critique yourself, and when you're one of the best quarterbacks ever, I think that just shows humility and how great of a player he is. So, yeah, I think he's definitely going to go down as one of the greats. And I'm definitely very lucky to be able to be alive and watch his career take off. I personally, you know, I've always been more of kind of a defensive backs guy, a running backs guy, but. I would say from a work ethic standpoint, Peyton Manning is definitely someone any athlete would want to emulate, just because he just has relentless work ethic and he's always trying to get better, even when he's at the top, which is very admirable.
Absolutely. Definitely one of the highest football IQs in the game. But, Nicky, thank you so much for coming on the show. Unfortunately, Malik's not here to talk to you as well, but I'm sure he is very thankful. Fans listening to the show right now, we are going to be posting Nicky's article from the Odyssey Online soon. Nicky, thanks again for coming on the show. Anytime you write an article, we'd be happy to talk to you. Thanks again for coming.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, see you, bud.
Yep, see you later.
All right, guys, again, that was Nicky Salatino from Franklin and Marshall University. He is an outstanding football player there, and you're definitely going to get to hear about him very soon. We not only appreciate his football intellect and his football skill, but we also appreciate his journalism abilities, and we hope both careers take off for him. And, you know, this is my take on Johnny Manziel. And if you look at the research behind Manziel, it just never made sense for him. The guy was not destined to be a good quarterback, and I don't necessarily blame everything on him. Now, his off-the-field issues are his off-the-field issues. There's no one responsible except for himself. If you're going to go out and party every weekend when you got a game the next day or on a Friday and you got a game on a Sunday, what are you saying not only to the fans that watch you but to your own teammates, especially when you are not just any position, but you're the quarterback, which is the head of that position. And you heard Nicky say it, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, you would never see them doing stuff like that. That's not the kind of stuff that an NFL quarterback portrays. Even the other guys, think of any NFL quarterback that has had history with a team. You look at Tony Romo, Eli Manning, Ben Roethlisberger. You don't see that. They're not partying, you know, every single night of the week. They're not partying in Vegas and Miami. It's just not like them, and it's not what an NFL quarterback is. And to all honesty, I'm not going to disrespect other positions here, because in all honesty, it's the other positions too. Every single player. You don't see Troy Polamalu when he was playing, or Michael Strahan, the greats. You never saw them in any position. They weren't doing stuff like that. It's kind of disappointing. But now, if you could just take a little bit, we're going to look a little bit at the timeline of Manziel. And the one thing I want to focus on is the situation that he was brought into and if he was really set up to fail. And this starts off with the Cleveland Browns and the organization as a whole. In my opinion, the Browns are definitively the worst franchise in the NFL currently. And when I say franchise, I'm not saying regular season wins and losses, because, you know, by that logic, the Titans are the worst team, but they certainly are not. No one here is trying to make the argument that the Browns are somehow better than the Titans in any way. I'm not saying the Titans are astronomically better, but there's no one out there saying that. And that's because they have talent. and they have a better organization up and down, from ownership to coaches to players and their work ethic. It's just different. It's different than other NFL organizations. And for some reason, the Cleveland Browns don't get that. Their organization just, I think what the toughest part about that is that the Cleveland Browns fans, which are some of the most loyal, diehard fans in the NFL, are treated miserably every single year. And it starts in the NFL draft, folks. Starts in the NFL draft. Look at the Titans, for example. This past year, they got quarterback Marcus Mariota. And though they are technically the worst regular season team, think about who they're going to have. Next year, they're going to have the new left tackle, definitive number one pick in Laremy Tunsil. You know, now for the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years, you are going to have a Titans team that has potentially an all-pro quarterback who could do it both ways, just like Super Cam over there in Carolina, and you have someone blocking his blind side. Yeah, so, you know, if you think about that, a little bit of Flacco, Michael Orr action, well, maybe 5, 10 years down the road, that's what Marcus Mariota and Laremy Tunsil will be remembered for. But then what do the Browns have? They don't have anyone. They don't really have any stars on that team. Josh Gordon was supposed to be their wide receiver star. Look where he is now. Keeps trying to get into the NFL and he can't do it. Let's just look into that 2014 draft and you could see. And now, there is a level of unfairness to the Browns, what I'm going to say right now, because it's all in retrospect. It's a lot easier to look at an NFL draft and say, wow, you know, what mistakes they made. Look at these players who came out to be great things. And you know that a lot of players don't make it past their third year in the NFL. Nonetheless, if you look at that 2014 draft, the slip-ups that the Cleveland Browns organization makes are troubling. First off, they trade up to get cornerback Justin Gilbert. And before we go on to Justin Gilbert, I would just like to point out the one guy that they traded to the Minnesota Vikings for this pick, Anthony Barr. Anthony Barr is now a Pro Bowl outside linebacker for the Minnesota Vikings. Do you know how many games Justin Gilbert has played since being drafted? Two. He's played two games. And not only that, there are reports throughout Cleveland and even national news networks that talk about Justin Gilbert, and they've showed time and time again that inside that organization, he is not respected. I've seen reports that say he is aloof, that he thinks he's too good for the organization, that because he was such a high draft pick, you know, no one else matters. And look where that's gotten him, right? And if you just look at it, the people that they could have gotten with that pick, rather than before Justin Gilbert, but even the people that they got before that, you look at it, Anthony Barr, Aaron Donald, Odell Beckham Jr., Zach Martin, CJ Mosley, even wide receiver Brandon Cooks. Think about what great careers those guys are off to, and they're only in their second year in the NFL. I mean, that's astronomical. And then you look at Justin Gilbert, and you're like, what's going on? He was drafted, if you could believe this, two or three spots behind Khalil Mack, who is the only defensive player in the history of the NFL to be an all-pro at multiple positions. But then you're like, so why is this guy not adding up? So let's say they take Justin Gilbert. Okay, all teams make mistakes. All teams misevaluate sometimes. Gilbert, listen, there was a consensus that Justin Gilbert was the right pick. There's no denying it. They needed a cornerback. They took a cornerback. He did not amount to what they thought he was going to do. But as I mentioned to Nikki when he was on earlier, at the 22nd overall pick, the Cleveland Browns could have taken Teddy Bridgewater, Derek Carr, A.J. McCarron, and Jimmy Garoppolo. And honestly, I would take Jimmy Garoppolo over Johnny Manziel because I don't even think of it's a talent standpoint. Jimmy Garoppolo has never gotten in trouble. And if you look at him, I bet a lot of Patriots fans in the New England and up there in New England are saying right now, we're grooming him to be the next Aaron Rodgers to Brett Favre. That's what the Brady Garoppolo thing is hoping to be. But nonetheless, Jimmy Garoppolo hasn't made headlines. He's done nothing wrong in the NFL, at least from a media standpoint. A.J. McCarron, the understudy to Andy Dalton, I'm so sorry that Malik's not here because this is the one time that I'm advocating for a Bengals player so heavily. Not only that, I'm going against the Browns, and he's not even here to listen to it. But A.J. McCarron played in the playoffs this year. Derek Carr, you heard on the show last week I was talking to fantasy expert Michael Piccirelli. I firmly believe he is ready to go in the NFL. I firmly believe it. I firmly believe that with Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper and a solid offensive line, if they could get him a running back, I think they're a dangerous team, especially with the Broncos. especially with the Broncos not having Peyton Manning anymore, and you're going to have to rely on Brock Osweiler. You never know what's going to happen there. Finally, you got Teddy Bridgewater also in the playoffs, a missed field goal away from winning his first game of the playoffs, playing in terrible weather. So you look at that and you're just like, what is going on with the Browns? They passed up on four legitimate quarterbacks. And if you look down the list, the people that they passed up on, they passed up on wide receivers Allen Robinson, Jarvis Landry, Devontae Adams, Martavis Bryant, Jordan Matthews, Kelvin Benjamin. It's safe to say that this draft was wide receiver heavy. You have eight guys, including Odell Beckham Jr. And Brandon Cooks in the mix as well. You also had in that draft Pro Bowl guard Trey Turner, who I was talking about during the Super Bowl. NFC champion Panthers, he's on a great O-line there. He's protecting Super Cam. Meanwhile, what's going on in the rest of the league? And I'll definitely tell you this, the Browns definitely could have used an offensive lineman. Running backs down the line, Devontae Freeman and Jeremy Hill, another Bengal, seemingly. And then finally, cornerback Pro Bowl Jason Verrett, another guy. So the amount of guys that they passed up on Manziel is troubling. And I'm disappointed as an NFL fan, because not only is this guy bringing shame to the Browns organization and making them look bad and having people like me go after that organization, but then you see what he does in the NFL since. The guy is a mess. He should be ashamed. If those allegations are true, he should be ashamed of himself. He shouldn't be in the NFL anymore. I would not want any team to take him. Why? There's no upside. The guy's 5'11". He doesn't do much. He has no football IQ to date right now, and the only IQ he has is in partying. And I don't feel any sympathy for him. And I want to talk about Peyton Manning a little bit because I feel like we're not doing a service to him. The guy's retiring, and I just want to say a quick note about Peyton Manning. We've talked about him a lot on the show. I firmly believe that Peyton Manning not only is one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game, I believe he is the best regular season quarterback to ever play the game. Wins, yards, touchdowns. He has the records, and some of them aren't even close. He's tied for wins. He's beaten them a lot by touchdowns and yards. So the only thing you could argue with is wins, and think about how many seasons Brett Favre played. But my point with Peyton Manning, and this is a term that's thrown around a lot in the media, and that's revolutionary. And did a player, a Hall of Fame player, revolutionize the position? And you hear that a lot, and sometimes it's overused. I mean, you hear about Marshawn Lynch as if he revolutionized the running back position. I've heard it about all these players, all these guys that are hoping to get up into the Hall of Fame in this class. And the truth is, folks, I don't think Peyton Manning – I think it's a disservice to Peyton Manning if you say that that he revolutionized the position, and you also say some of the other guys, because Peyton Manning revolutionized the position like no one else. He not only revolutionized the quarterback position, he revolutionized the position of NFL athlete, because his IQ in the NFL was off the charts. The way he could dissect defenses were incredible. We've never seen anything like it. You haven't. You haven't seen anyone quite like Peyton Manning. His ability to look at a defense and be given three plays, a running play and two pass plays. This was what was described multiple accounts during the Colts time with his offensive coordinator and Tony Dungy as head coach. He was given multiple plays and he was trusted to make the right call. And guess what? He made the right call a lot of time. And don't define Peyton Manning with regards to his legacy. Don't define his legacy based on Super Bowls, because the guy was much more than just two out of four Super Bowls. Because you can even criticize that he won that final Super Bowl, but, you know, let's just say he didn't single-handedly do it. You know, it wasn't his team quite like the Colts were back in the mid-2000s. But my point is about Peyton Manning is that he was an incredible athlete, but although he didn't have, say, the strongest arm, he wasn't the fastest, he wasn't necessarily the biggest, he was the smartest, and it showed that, and I think that was hopeful for a lot of athletes out there who may not be the biggest, may not be the strongest, may not be the fastest. But if you're smart, you study the game, like Nikki said, as an athlete, as a football player, film is just so important. And if you study it nonstop and you can dissect a defense, anything is possible. Any team can be a Super Bowl team with the right amount of quarterback. And it's just so funny how we're talking about Johnny Manziel, who lacks all this effort, and Peyton Manning, who was the epitome of effort. And it's incredible how it all works out. I'm sure Malik and I will be talking about Peyton Manning on the show next week as we transition from not only NFL to NBA and other news as well. But from the right way, Peyton Manning, I just want to say thank you for giving 12-plus seasons – sorry, not 12, more like 16, 17 seasons to the NFL. Thank you for letting a whole generation of not only NFL fans but kids who watch the game like me, born in 1997, got to watch Peyton Manning in 1998, probably first remember him in the early 2000s. Thank you for giving us a great product on the field and showing us how to be not only a great athlete but a great person and a class act on and off the field. I personally appreciate everything you do. I'm sure Malik appreciates it, and a lot of athletes out there, all different shapes and sizes, all different sports, respect what you did, and we want to say thank you. As we switch gears a little bit now, we do have a couple callers that want to talk about the NBA, and we're excited to talk about the NBA here on The Right Way. We're looking at playoffs coming down the road now as we're in the middle of March, post-All-Star break, and we got a lot of stuff going on. So I believe we have a caller on right now, so as we click on it now. So, hi, who am I speaking with?
Hi there. Is this The Right Way?
Hey, what's up?
Can you hear me?
Who am I speaking with?
Hey, this is Akshay from Connecticut. How you doing?
Hey, Akshay from Connecticut. Thanks for calling into the show. So what do you got for us?
Yeah, so switching gears to the NBA, you were just talking about the Browns. My question is about the Cavs, and
I
was looking at, I think, kind of the NBA standings and up and down the standings, and the Eastern Conference is arguably like the most balanced it's been in a long time, especially compared to the top-heavy Western Conference. And I'm a Toronto Raptors fan, so this question might be a little biased, but who do you see challenging the Cavs for the Eastern Conference title, and why?
Well, I think you got a really good point there with that the Western Conference is top-heavy and the Eastern Conference isn't. If you look at the standings right now, Cleveland, I believe, only has a 13-game lead on eighth place, whereas Golden State, although they lost tonight, and we'll be talking about that in a little bit, have a 25.5 game lead on eighth place. So it's incredible how the two conferences vary. From an Eastern Conference standpoint, in terms of challenging Cleveland, we talked to Bill Ingram last week on the show, and he said no one's really got a chance against Cleveland, but I got to disagree with him on that, because personally, I think there are two teams that can really challenge Cleveland. One is the Toronto Raptors, and that's because, first off, they play in an easier division than Cleveland in that aspect. And further, they're 9-1 in their division. They also, like the Cavs, play very well at home. They've done very well in their last 10 games, and they're on a bit of a streak right now. And the only issue that I have with Toronto is that, you know, I was looking at the top four teams in the Eastern Conference and in the Western Conference. I was looking at their schedules, and the only issue with Toronto is that they have a couple tests coming up. If you've noticed, they got to play the 5-seed Hawks, the 4-seed Heat, the 8-seed Bulls, 7-seed Pacers, and the 3-seed Celtics, all in their next 7 games, along with having easier matchups against the Bucks and the Nets. So, Akshay, let me ask you: with Toronto only having a 2.5 game lead, do you think that they have a shot? It's not just beating them in the playoffs, but do you think they have a shot at catching the Cavaliers with just 2.5 games back with about 10-11 games left to go?
Well, you know, they definitely have a shot at catching the Cavs. I mean, the Cavs have not looked as dominant as a lot of people thought they would be this year, especially with the healthy roster and LeBron coming back with a vengeance with last year's finals. But to be honest, I mean, I keep up with the Raptors quite a bit and other teams in the Atlantic, especially the Celtics, and I don't think those teams are necessarily trying to catch the Cavs as they are trying to hone themselves in for the playoffs. I think a lot of teams right now are trying to make sure that they can move forward in the playoffs as opposed to playoff seeding, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's true. But so do you think, though, so you're saying the Toronto ideology there And let me just say, the other team I was going to mention would be the Boston Celtics, though I think the Miami Heat have a shot too. But you're saying that you believe that Toronto isn't really intimidated by Cleveland in terms of the number one seed. They're more intimidated about them if they get into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, the Raptors went 2-1 against the Cavs this season. They won that. They have the series tiebreaker, and if they do end up catching them, that's great for them. They get the one seed, they get home court advantage. But the past 2 years, they haven't gone out of the first round, and for them, going further into the playoffs is more important than playoff seeding. So if they have to rest, you know, their backcourt of Lowry and DeRozan to make sure that they're healthy for the playoffs, they're going to do that. They, you know, I don't think. And this goes for the Celtics and other teams that could possibly catch the Cavs. I'm not sure if it's possible with the 3 and 4 seeds right now. But I think they're more worried about seeding and matchups as opposed to catching the Cavs.
That's true. So I have to agree with you. The only issue that I see is I see where you're coming from, where they want to rest their players and stuff like that. But I think there is a certain competitive edge that you promote if you say, listen, Toronto has a 2.5 game lead. They're 2.5 games back of Cleveland, but they have a 5-game lead on Boston between the second and third seed. If you have a shot
right.
to go for it, Cleveland is not, you know, they're not exactly playing all-star basketball. If they were in the Western Conference, they would barely be the third seed, barely ahead of Oklahoma City. So, I don't necessarily agree with you that Toronto should ease up any bit, but I will say, and I think this is good for you, I do think Toronto has a shot at contending Cleveland. Again, the only issue is, looking at the Cavs schedule, I just pulled it up now, that they have like 5 out of the next, first of all, they're playing the Western Conference for the final, basically the final 7 out of the last like 10 games. And
yeah,
five
and I think
out
they have
seven,
a road-heavy schedule.
Yeah, that is true. And 5 out of the next 7 games are against pretty easy opponents with the Kings, Lakers, Jazz, Magic. But they do have to play seeded teams too, like the Clippers, Mavericks, and Grizzlies. So from a Toronto standpoint, I think if you could see, you know, the Cavaliers break down a little bit, have to play a lot of games on the road, it could tire them out. And then, you know, maybe there's a shot that you could catch them, and also they'll get beat down right before the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I think it all depends on how the rest of the March plays out. And I think depending on what happens then the early set of games in April will kind of dictate whether or not Toronto goes for it or the Cavs kind of hold back themselves and rest LeBron James and Love. So I think it's just something, a situation that has to play out. I just find it really interesting that, you know, the Cavs are not necessarily kind of the go-to number one option in a lot of people's eyes right now. I mean, early in the season, they definitely were. But, you know, with the Bulls, Chicago was sometimes like a good number two pick. But injuries have like decimated them, in my opinion. And hey, I mean, I'm a Raptors fan. It's good for me. It's good for the rest of the Eastern Conference, which has kind of struggled for a while. So
it's a really good point. And I think, you know, Malik is a big Bengals fan on the show. He's also a big Cavaliers fan. But you got a little bit of a paradox here, because the Bengals actually relate a lot to this Toronto team, where they just can't get out of the first round of the playoffs, but
they get
there every year.
Yeah, we just can't get out of the first round.
Yeah, so do you think that's going to be an issue there, because you got two young stars in DeRozan and Lowry, but they don't really have the experience in the playoffs. So it's going to be interesting, don't you think, just because they have to prove themselves. They play against LeBron
they
in
do.
The All-Star game.
Absolutely.
Go ahead. Yeah, so I mean, it's going to be interesting. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I completely agree with that. Like, people are betting against them just because of what's happened the past 2 playoff seasons for them. And this is honestly like a make or break season for this core, because if they can't do it in the playoffs, they're going to blow it all up. It'll be interesting how it plays out. I have another question if we have time.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's all right. Yeah, looking to the Western Conference, I've been kind of eyeing Kevin Durant and this whole free agency stuff. And if OKC doesn't do very well in the postseason this year, do you see KD kind of moving along from Oklahoma City in the offseason, the offseason and free agency? And I saw some headlines about him possibly going to the Golden State Warriors. I don't know if that's true or not. But what's your take on that?
Well, I think the problem with Kevin Durant, and you can agree with this or not, but he's not necessarily the most vocal player in the world. You don't really know his intentions at all. He's obviously not going to say that he's eyeing up other teams as Oklahoma City tries to make a run in the playoffs, but
no, definitely not.
For him,
yeah.
I think it could just be frustrating for him because his team spends the second most amount of money this year in the NBA. I mean, $11 million behind Cleveland, who's well over the salary cap. But nonetheless, they're spending a lot of money, and he's not really getting the production or the team that he was expecting. And to be frustrated constantly by the fact that Golden State and San Antonio are both above them every single year, it could be annoying for him. So in my eyes, I think that if Kevin Durant doesn't make it into the conference championship or doesn't make it into the NBA Finals, I don't think he's going to stay in Oklahoma City. And then, in that case, it becomes where would he go? And I'm sure you see all the speculations. Yeah, you see it from Golden State and Washington. I'm here in Washington right now, and you see that as well because, you know, he has the connections there. I think he's from just outside Baltimore, that Washington-Baltimore area. So it becomes where would he go? Even the Knicks want to look at him, maybe Houston, other teams.
Houston was looking at him.
Yeah, and Houston always tries to make a run at them, especially with the doubts with Dwight Howard and whether or not they want James Harden. Bill Ingram talked about that as well. But the issue for me is not where he wants to go. It's what team can afford this guy. The guy's making $21 million this year.
Well, that's the
and
reason,
if you look at it –
that's the reason – the Warriors could actually pursue him because the cap is just rising so much that there would be more teams than normal that can pursue him, I think.
Yeah, so the cap will raise to $70 million this season, but Golden State is currently at $93 million, but 24, according to my calculations, 24 out of the 30 teams in the NBA are over the salary cap. In fact, Toronto is just over at 71. Next year, Oklahoma City will only be at $67 million, which is good enough for them that they could sign Durant to if he wants to be paid $21 million like he was this year. Golden State also, but it would be kind of risky because Golden State would be up flirting with $95-96 million, and you don't really know if management there would even be able to afford that. They would probably have to cut people. And I don't know how the contracts work with Iguodala and some other guys. Klay Thompson's making a lot of money and stuff like that. There may have to be some sort of sign and trade type deal.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And Curry hasn't even signed his like monster contract yet. He's signed to like a pretty bargain deal for the Warriors, I think.
Curry signed to a mediocre deal. He's at like I think he's making $12 million this year. Klay Thompson's
making nothing to what he should.
Exactly. So, I guess your follow-up question should be, what does Russell Westbrook look like? Because he's going to be available in the following year. And I, as a Knicks fan, I'm insisting that the Knicks make a run at him because in this 2017-2018 season, the Knicks will be their cap will want to be very low at $40 million, and that could be a year where Russell Westbrook not only leaves Oklahoma City, especially if Kevin Durant leaves. If Kevin Durant leaves, I don't think Russell Westbrook will stay, even if he wants to be the star there, because he could go to a big city, big marketplace like New York and get paid $20 million like KD is going to get paid and still be surrounded by talent if he still wants to have Melo on his team, if he wants to have a young Porzingis on his team. That could be an interesting big three of all different ages. And who knows, maybe Toronto. I mean, Toronto is going to have money to spend. They're at $72 million, but if we're saying Golden State could spend money, then really Toronto could spend money. They could add an additional player next year as well. So from a management standpoint, you guys are setting up.
We are. But the thing is, you know, we have Lowry signed up, and I don't think management's going to be too keen on letting him go. But I think you're right. New York seems like an intriguing piece, especially 2 years from now when, like, Melo's going to be 33. He's going to be pushing for the one Knicks team that he needs to, like, make it past the conference finals he's never done in his career yet. And I think competing in the Eastern Conference, which is a little easier than the West, might be intriguing for Westbrook, even though he's, like, uber competitive. But I think, you're a Knicks fan. I think Westbrook to the Knicks would actually make sense in 2 years, especially if Durant leaves. But if Durant stays, I don't see Westbrook leaving either. I think they're one of the best, like, 1-2 punches in the league, arguably the best. So if Durant stays, I think Westbrook's going to stay, but if Durant bolts, I think Oklahoma City could be in a bad place.
And it's true because and I think it would also be a really great matchup, too, to see, especially if Durant stays in the West and Westbrook would go to the East. That would be a very interesting final if you would have Curry, Thompson, and then maybe even Durant battling it out in the conference championship and then NBA Finals. You're seeing a Westbrook, Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson kind of matchup. It would be pretty interesting to see. And also the Cavaliers, too. Since they have, you know, the next couple of years signed up, they're in 2018-2019, which is 4 years down the road, they already are committed to $53 million, if that makes sense. So, I mean, I think
yeah.
Westbrook would also like to see maybe competing against Cleveland a couple more times. And if Toronto continues to grow and the Celtics and maybe even the Heat, if they continue to grow, I think Westbrook and even Durant would be intrigued by the Eastern Conference more than the Western Conference.
Yeah, I agree with that, for sure. I think this postseason is going to be pretty big for a lot of teams in terms of the direction they take during the offseason. This offseason is going to be pretty insane, considering the cap's going to be like $20 million more than it is now, and so many players are going to be hitting the offseason with no contracts. So, see what happens.
Yeah, and not only that, but I think, as we said before, I think the playoffs are kind of going to dictate like the future for a lot of these free agents too, if they see interest in say Toronto and stuff like that, and it also hurts teams too. It hurts teams like maybe Indiana or the Los Angeles Lakers or maybe even the Clippers if they don't have like for the Clippers for example, if they don't have a good year in the playoffs, it could hurt them for future players wanting to go to that city.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you look at Houston right now; they're kind of all of this combobulated, and they're one of the teams that want to pursue Kevin Durant. And he's not going to want to go there when you look at the whole dynamic between Harden and Howard and the front office. He doesn't want to go to a franchise that's struggling like that right now. And he's going to go to one that has, like, a top-notch kind of ownership from the top to the bottom. And I think the Knicks, you know, they've struggled with a little bit, like, with that stuff for a while, but I think Jackson might help. I think Golden State obviously is a long shot, but you know they're very well run. I think Toronto and Boston are the same. So we'll see.
Very nice, Akshay. Do you have any more questions for me?
No, that's it. Thanks for this is a good talk. Thanks.
Thanks, Akshay, for coming on the show. It's great talking to you, and hopefully we can talk more NBA news, especially with a Toronto fan, real soon. Okay, bud.
All right. Thanks. See ya.
All right, again, that was Akshay calling from Connecticut. Want to thank him for coming on to The Right Way. We got about 10 minutes left on the show, and there's just a couple more things that we want to add on to. We're actually going to look at back at the NBA, and news, big news coming out just hours before I went on the air is the Warriors losing to Los Angeles, and that came down to Steph Curry and Klay Thompson not shooting really well at 1.1 for 18 from behind the line. So I saw an interesting comparison that both the 95-96 Bulls, which have been talked about throughout the NBA this year, with drawing comparisons to that current Golden State team, both of them struggled losing in double digits to teams in their 61st game of the regular season. A little bit of a coincidence there. And the Bulls, might I add, lost to the Knicks in their 61st game, losing by 32 points. So a little bit of just a little tidbit there, but just something to look out for, see how the Warriors react to this. Personally, as a fan, it's more so in sports that the teams don't have as many games in. So in basketball, it really is not going to be too big of a deal. But in a game like football, for example, like the Panthers losing towards the end of the year, I think was good for them. Because it allows them to regroup, it allows them to focus up again, it allows them to say, okay, that pressure of being unbeaten isn't there anymore, now let's go play our game, let's dictate how we want this game to go. And I think you saw it in Cam Newton, you see it in other players, and I think a loss every now and then for the Warriors is good, especially in the NBA. There is no reason that they need to think about winning 70 games or however many games they want to win. It's not like that. You just got to make the playoffs, and a lot like in the NHL because they play similar schedules in that essence. just get in. If you get in, you're going to be in good shape. And, you know, for Golden State and San Antonio, they're already in the playoffs. They're playing preseeding, but they have a 15 – the Golden State Warriors have a 15-game lead on third place, the Oklahoma City Thunder, that is. San Antonio having just about an 11-game lead on them. So at the end of the day, there's nothing to really worry about. And the Bay Area, but just something to keep your eyes on. Other big news, I always want to talk a little bit of Major League Baseball action this week, especially since we're getting into spring training. And, you know, as the NFL season kind of cycles out, especially after draft day, we're going to be talking a little bit about Major League Baseball, and especially we've had a lot of emails and callers coming in and telling us that they want to look into baseball. And that's definitely something we're going to be doing on the Right Way in the coming weeks. And one of the big news stories that came out the last couple of days was Chase Utley's suspension getting reversed. Now, as a Mets fan, obviously I'm going to be a little biased there and say that I dislike Chase Utley. He was a Philly. I never really liked him too much. Although he's a class act, I just didn't like him as a player because he was a Mets killer. But I, you know, personally, although I don't really appreciate the suspension getting reversed, the ideology behind it, which was, it's been a rule that was called multiple times. And for those of you who are really unfamiliar with the situation, Chase Utley last year between the Dodgers and the Mets had a bit of an illegal slide on Ruben Tejada, which fractured his leg, a gruesome injury. It sidelined him, obviously, for the rest of the playoffs that year when the Mets made their run to the World Series in their eventual loss to the Kansas City Royals. But nonetheless, they did not have starting middle infielder, which is very important. And the debate became, well, since the early 1900s, there's been this rule that, you know, you're allowed to slide into the second baseman or the shortstop when they're turning two. And it's a questionable call. As long as they can make contact with the base and stuff like that, it's okay. And Utley did not appear to be able to make contact with the base. Nonetheless, they said it was okay. But then they eventually suspended him after that game. And now it was reversed, but that call has been cleared up. And I think the call and the way they've reviewed it now, I think, is really nice. What they're saying now is that there has to be some level of getting to that base, but you are allowed to hit him. It takes the safety aspect into account, but it also allows for the tradition of the sport. There's not too much physical contact in baseball, as you guys know, especially after the Buster Posey ruling, where you're not allowed to run head-on into the catcher anymore. The catcher's not supposed to block the plate and stuff like that. But at the same time, this is a traditional part of the game that has been around for over 100 years, a century. So you have to appreciate that. And I think that's why the MLB, in this aspect, made the right call, though not particularly a fan of Chase Utley. Another big story that I want to shine some light to is Aroldis Chapman getting suspended. He was suspended 30 games. There's reports now that he's trying to become a United States citizen. And that's also been dominating the headlines. And, of course, he, much like Johnny Manziel, is facing a domestic violence case. And not the only MLB player that is facing that. Jose Reyes, a former New York Met, Toronto Blue Jay, and now currently Colorado Rocky via trade in the middle of last season. Excuse me. He also is facing domestic violence charges, and it's a problem in the NFL now that has in Major League Baseball that has spread. It was something that we were seeing a lot with NFL players just a few years ago, and now it has been spreading to other sports, and it's unfortunate because it's something that really needs to be addressed, not just from a media standpoint, but from an action standpoint of the players. So, and the reason that we want to talk about Aroldis Chapman is not just because of the situation he's facing, but the fact that he's now playing for the most popular team in Major League Baseball, which is the New York Yankees. And the reason that I find this to be such a troubling issue is because when you go out and you get arguably the best closer in baseball in Aroldis Chapman, not only do you expect him to be able to play on your team, which is something that is important, but you want him to be able to adjust and be able to find a flow. And the one difficult thing about the bullpen in Major League Baseball is that it's not exactly the easiest thing to adjust to. You never really know when you're going to go into the game. There's certain instances where you know you're going in, especially if you're a closer. And going into the ninth inning, if your team has a 1, 2, or 3-run lead, maybe even a 4-run lead, you're going into the game. And it's difficult for the Yankees now. And this is why I'm nervous, even though as a Mets fan, I'm nervous for Joe Girardi, because he has to make interesting decisions in the first 30 games of the MLB season, which as a coach, you do not want to have to do. You want to have a system going where you have a seventh inning pitcher, an eighth inning pitcher, and a ninth inning pitcher. And the rest of your relievers are meant to help out when your pitcher screws up, your starting pitcher screws up in the first through sixth innings. That's it. Your seventh, eighth, and ninth pitchers should stay the same. They should not be coming in other innings unless they're pitching really well or you have a big lead. But if the game is a three-run or less game, you want to have the same pitchers going in. And that's where this is going to hurt the Yankees the most. Because in the first 30 games of the season, April to May, you want to have a set formula. You want to see what works. If Chapman is not working out as closer, for example, you could put him in the eighth inning and have them switch. And they know they already have a good guy, the lefty there, in New York. They have someone that could already fulfill those duties. Yet, by Chapman being suspended, it screws everything up. You now have to put that guy, you have to push everyone back. So your eighth and seventh and eighth guys are now your eighth and ninth guys. And then when Chapman comes back in, you have to have all these players adjust. And as a Yankees fan, you have to hope that they are going to adjust quickly. But at the end of the day, you don't know that. And that's why it's a very important issue if I'm a Yankees fan. These 30 games, it's not, will they legitimately impact the season? Maybe, especially if they come down to a race like they did last year, where trying to get into the wild card, for example, if you have a pitcher that can go and you lose two or three games because you have someone closing who really shouldn't be your closer and you're paying guy millions of dollars a year to be your closer and he's not there, and you lose that and you lose your division by three games or you lose the wild card by a game or two, especially when it's a play-in game, it's going to hurt them. And I feel bad for the Yankees because this is something that you don't want to happen. But at the same time, little respect for Chapman, especially if the allegations are true. And unfortunately, it's a terrible instance. But again, we want to talk more about Major League Baseball in the coming weeks. Please, if you're interested, please call into the show. We'll be happy to hear you. Again, Malik is not here for the show tonight. He is sick, but I want to thank him and our producer, Randy Zelia, from Back Sports Page for giving me the opportunity do the show once again. It's been a great couple months here on Back Sports Page, Block Talk Radio, of course, The Right Way with Austin Mayo and Malik Wright. Had a great time thus far. Just give you an update on the couple things that are coming up as our show wraps up for tonight. Next week, we got March Madness Bracketology, which we'll be really excited for. Make sure, my biggest suggestion, the key to doing well in your brackets, guys, is to pay attention now. And it's okay if you weren't paying attention much in the regular season, but watch the conference championships because conference championships are where you see what your teams are made of. If you want to see a good number one seed, chances are they won their conference championship. See what their weaknesses are. All right, are they a good free throw shooting team? Do they play well in late games and stuff like that? It doesn't have to be a blowout every single time. You have to see if they play clutch because a lot of these games in March Madness where teams struggle and where a 14 seed could beat a 3 seed and a 15 seed could beat a 2 seed is when teams are not good at finishing ball games. And I saw it firsthand here at GW when I saw the number 6 seed Virginia lose to GW. Virginia did not play well at the end of that game, and that's why they lost. And unfortunately, though, I don't think GW will be making the tournament this year. It's important to watch your conference championships because you can see what teams are good and what teams aren't good. It helped me a lot a couple years ago when I was looking at UConn and they won the ACC championship. Of course, Kemba Walker in that game. And everyone said the UConn would be tired and stuff like that. You don't look at it that way. You see, that's a team that can win in the clutch playing the top opponents in their division, and they still did well. And that's the important thing there. So remember, that is what you have to watch for in March Madness this year. Also, guys, make sure you follow us on Instagram and Twitter at The Right Way BSP. That's TheRightWayBSP on Twitter and on Instagram. We've had a couple of posts just in the last day or two. And it's been a really good time, everyone, so we've been enjoying that thus far. Again, I want to thank everyone for listening to the show tonight, and, of course, you guys should be downloading us on iTunes as we close out the show tonight, and make sure you look for us the coming week where we'll be posting stuff on Twitter and on Instagram, and, of course, on our Facebook page where you'll be able to see the link for the show afterwards. I want to say thank you again to Back Sports Page and Block Talk Radio for having the show this week. I can't wait to talk to Malik next week about the show, and we're really looking forward to talking to you guys more NFL, NBA, and much more action. So thanks again for tuning in to The Right Way with Austin Mayo and Malik Wright. I'll see you next week, guys.